Hi, this is Pastor Chris, and welcome to Strength for Today from Living Hope Baptist Church in Geneva, New York. Today is Monday, April 6, 2020. Well, today marks the start of our third work week in quarantine. I hope you have been able to find productive things to do with your time, and I hope you aren't going stir crazy yet. Hang in there. Things will get better. I'm not sure how Dawn and her son Clark were related to us. It must have been some sort of distant connection, since my father was an only child and my mother's brother and his family lived overseas. But regardless, they showed up one beautiful spring evening at our house. Must have been spring. Cherry trees were blossoming and the air carried that crispness that made you feel all lively and happy. And I remember following my dad out past the cherry trees to the driveway to welcome Dawn and Clark to Seattle and to help them carry in their luggage. Dawn and Clark were cool in ways only an 8-year-old boy could really appreciate. Dawn wore jeans and cowboy boots, things my mother never would have worn, and she drove a Pinto, a forerunner to the hatchback, a sort of stubby station wagon that got pulled off the market a few years later, I think because some genius designed it with a gas tank that exploded when you got rear-ended. And her Pinto had Western-style detailing on it that seemed to match the Texas license plate on its back. Yeah. I said, Texas, land of gunfights and the Alamo. I'd never been to Texas, but I heard about it, even growing up here in Seattle, Washington. But it was a faraway land populated by cacti and bank robbers, a place where the law was made by a man with a six-shooter. Yeah, I had watched the movies. Dad said Dawn was from some part of Texas called Houston. And he said she had gone through something called a divorce, something I understood at the time as being a nice way of saying her husband had died. But Dad said I wasn't supposed to talk about that or mention it. So I didn't. But it made me look at Clark differently, sure like he was a sad, exotic animal, not a normal 10-year-old. I remember seeing him get out of the car. He stretched and looked around. Skinny kid, taller than I was, with pants that didn't seem to reach his shoes. When he got out, he was wearing a rumpled sweatshirt, and having stretched, he yanked it off and tossed it into the back of the Pinto. I was still hanging back behind my dad, getting the lay of the land, so to speak. So I stole a glance through the window into the back of the car, and it was piled full of junk. Never seen anything like it. Wasn't like any sort of packing I'd ever seen. Whenever my family went on trips, the packing was planned with precision. Must have been because my dad was an engineer. So there he was, Clark, some random kid I'd never heard of till the day before, standing in front of me, all Texas, all scrawny, tanned, taller than me. I introduced myself the way I was supposed to. Then I helped Dad carry in their luggage. They were to spend the night downstairs, sleeping on the foldaway bed. My brother was braver than I. Once we were all inside, he fell into a natural sort of conversation with Clark, covering TV and Legos and G.I. Joes. Of course, then he and Clark got too loud, and my mom suggested we boys go downstairs and play, and I followed them down the stairs. I think every kid's house seems 10 times bigger than it is in real life. Ours was no exception. Our basement to me was huge and constituted a realm of adventure sufficient to inspire and terrify any kid. At one corner was our playroom. This was a large unfinished room in which we kept our blocks, Lionel trains, toys, and Legos. The playroom was, in my mind, a safe place, not like the storage room next to it. The storage room was a long, windowless, L-shaped room that was filled floor-to-ceiling with boxes and knick-knacks. At the center of it was an alcove that contained a noisy, scary contraption known as the furnace. Even with the light switched on, that storage room was dark and shadowy. And if there were robbers and murderers to be found, I was sure that was where. I did my best to avoid that storage room. To my mind, the only legitimate reason for going into the storage room was to rush from one end to the other, since the doors at either end offered the fastest route from the playroom into Dad's den. Now, Dad's den wasn't as scary. It had a window, and there were books and models and paints, and with just a few quick steps, you could go around the end of the wall and step into the basement's family room, a warm, well-lit, safe place, the room where Clark and Dawn would be staying that night. We and my brother and Clark got out a game and settled down to play on the floor of the living room. I stayed back a bit and watched, but finally I got up my courage and I joined them. And as we played, I realized that Clark was just a kid, like me and my brother. even if he was from Texas. And I loosened up and started really to play, you know, fooling around. Now, I've always had a tendency to get carried away when I play. My mom used to call it getting wired up. The excitement would just get me going, and I would start to ride it like a wave. I might start out a bit shy, but once I joined in, I was all in, and usually a little too far for all in. This might help you get what I mean if I tell you this. Some years later, when I was in sixth grade, a friend named Bobby took me aside. Bobby had heard that I was transferring to another school. And the end of that year, and it was coming up, and he wanted to give me some advice. So he took me to the side of the playground one day, and he put an arm around my shoulder. No, seriously, that's my memory. What sixth grader in the world does that? Was he some sort of 40-year-old in a 12-year-old body? I don't know. Anyhow, then he said to me, "Chris, when we were kids..." Yeah, seriously, this little kid is telling me this. Anyways, "Chris, when we were kids, we used to run around and kick each other in the fanny. We stopped, but you didn't. You should stop." Wow, words of wisdom from Bobby. And it was true. I was that fanny-kicking kid who couldn't pick up on social cues and got so hyper that his teachers were always putting him in corners until he could, quote-unquote, control himself. And so with Clark and my brother, I got all hyped up and rambunctious. I really got into it, playing and running and jumping and doing all that sort of stuff. And then at one point, I don't remember why, I thought it would be a good idea to leave the family room as though I was going upstairs, but then to sneak through the storage room and hide in Dad's den behind the wall that separated it from the family room. I think I must have been planning to jump out and surprise the other two boys. So I crouched there behind the wall and waited for the right moment. And then I heard Clark ask my brother, "Why is your brother a jerk?" To that point, I had been happy. I was playing, full of joy and mischief. But those words pierced my heart like a pin touching a balloon, and my joy was gone. I listened for another moment or two. I wanted to hear my brother's objections to Clark's statement, but they didn't come. Clark never knew I overheard him, neither did my brother. I did not jump out and surprise them. And I just sat there in the dark, and considered the judgment I had received. I was a jerk. After feeling initially crushed, I wanted to lash out. Who was this kid to judge me this way, to summarize the entirety of my person with those words, "He's a jerk"? I wanted to label him a jerk in return. But you know what? I couldn't. I couldn't think of any reason to call him one, other than he had stated an unguarded assessment of my nature. And since I couldn't justify lashing out, I instead was crushed all the more. I can, as you still see, remember all of this. As I record it, I can still feel the pain. Pain of alienation, disillusionment, disappointment, and sadness. I had wanted fun and friendship, but I had earned disapproval and rejection. I don't remember what else we did that evening. Don and Clark left the next morning, and we never actually saw or heard from them again. And still I remember his words. Ecclesiastes 7:21-22 addresses this issue. It says, "Do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. For many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others." Well, I wish I had known and understood that proverb a long time ago. It could have saved me a lot of pain. And that leads me to today's life principle. I'm going to state it in the way that makes the most sense to me. You might have a better or different way to state it, but here it is. Let it go. Let it go. As I said, there are other ways one might be tempted to express this. Perhaps you would say forgive, as you have been forgiven. And I could see the point. But for me, the question here is not really forgiveness. Clark didn't actually do anything wrong, unless I want to criticize him for speaking unkindly, I guess. But I'm not sure I can even do that. I think he was probably just making a childlike, truthful observation of my nature, a bit akin to saying something like, "I see Chris is still a fanny kicker. Why is that?" Or perhaps we could speak of self-forgiveness. But I'm not sure I sinned either. What he was observing really was my childishness. So again, I'm not sure this is a situation calling for forgiveness. And yet, it hurt. It hurt like crazy. And it ruined the evening and the relationship for me. As I've mentioned before, these life principles are, I hope, axiomatic statements of biblical truth upon which we can confidently build our lives. They are what I would want my children to hear, to understand, and to apply in their own lives. They are what I want to apply in my own life. And so I offer this one. Let it go. The core concept contained in that passage of Ecclesiastes is, I think, captured in these words. Do not take to heart everything people say. This encouragement, as I understand it, is to place a guard by your figurative ear. As you go through life, you will hear a lot of feedback. Some of it will be encouraging, and frankly, some will be discouraging. You must command that guard to discriminate among that feedback, to determine what and to what extent that feedback will be granted entry. And at the center of your being is your heart, where you hold fast to those things which are dearest to you, to people, to concepts, to memories. And here's the kicker, and incidentally, what I want my children and myself to hear, you can choose what you allow into your heart. And what's in your heart matters. As Proverbs 4:23 says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. That is why I think this principle is so important. There are a lot of words, thoughts, and feelings that are not worth holding on to. And in these situations, the principle fits, let it go. When this happened with Clark, I did not know this principle. And I did not have the maturity to contextualize it. I didn't have any understanding of divorce or of the harm it could inflict on a child. I didn't know what it was like to take an exhausting road trip into the unknown. And I certainly did not have the self-awareness to understand or explain why, indeed, I acted like a jerk, why I failed to read social cues, and why I could not rein in my excitement. So everything at that time went straight to my heart, and it hurt. But now, I can, and I should, let it go. There are a lot of reasons to let it go. First, letting go of such things reflects a mature understanding of our lives in a sin-marred universe. Because of man's sin, everything is screwed up. Society, other people, ourselves. We have trouble communicating, and sometimes even when we intend to do nice things or say nice things, they all get messed up and we hurt people. Because we are sinners. And because we are sinners, we hurt people. And because they are sinners too, sometimes they hurt us. And to let it go means to be a realist. Sometimes we get hurt. It happens. Move on. Second, letting go of such things is a way of extending grace. We recognize that we have also said hurtful things. We want others to forgive us and to overlook our faults. So why are we judging the other person harshly for saying a hurtful thing about us? I want grace when I blow it, whether I did it intentionally or not. And I should extend to others that grace when they do. Remember, by the measure you measure, you will be measured. Third, letting go of such things is a mature assessment of some truth claims in a sin-cursed world. The mere statement that something is true does not make it true. The statement may be simply false. But let me suggest just a few things let it go does not mean. First, letting it go does not mean failing to listen and learn. Clark's statement was a rare, though painful, opportunity for me to look in a societal mirror, to see myself as another person saw me. And this was an opportunity to reflect, to consider my behavior, and to see whether indeed I was being a jerk. Second, to let it go does not mean overlooking or ignoring sin. If I evaluate my life, and through the leading of God's Holy Spirit, I identify sin, I must deal with it in accordance to God's word, confessing it. That means I can't just let it go and ignore it. Rather, I must say the same thing God says about it and ask for his forgiveness, that the fellowship I enjoy with God as a believer will not be interrupted. Third, to let it go does not mean to deny any feelings the situation has caused. It is not to deny these feelings, but rather to accept them, acknowledge them, own them, so to speak, and then to choose to move on. So let's make this practical for today. Okay, today, someone may hurt your feelings or irritate you. It is possible, since we are all living in close quarters, we are all living in quarantine right now, that we become irritated by one another. Not because of sin, but just because we are sinful people. And sinful people can at times do things that are annoying and irritating. Well, today, you and I, we have a choice. You can take it to heart, or you can let it go. Now, as someone who just retold a painful moment from himself, from his memory, of when he was 8 years old, who remembers it to this day, who suffered grief because he failed to heed this principle, I encourage you to let it go. You'll be happy you did, and you will save yourself a great deal of heartache. Tomorrow, we will consider exactly, if we let it go, what we should hold on to. Well, may the Lord richly bless you today as you remember that the best is yet to come. God bless.